Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James. Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, gay.
And ladylike.
I see you, lady.
We're back, y'all.
I see you.
Oh, I see myself, too. I see you. I see me. I see we.
You a nasty woman. Nasty. Nasty corner. She gonna vote. Oh, you nasty podcast.
Oh, man. This week on Minority Corner.
What's happening? Like, brace yourselves.
We got some topics. I'm about to talk about the Nobel Peace Prize.
Ooh, fuck yeah.
Gonna get hella academic.
Are you talking about how I was snubbed once again and I'm upset?
I know.
I'm looking at you, Nobel.
I'm also talking about how ladies tend to get snubbed a lot too. So.
Oh, so ladies and James both equally get snubbed year after year. And you know what? Minority Corner, and we're not having it.
No, we're not.
No moss.
We're not snubbing you at all, because what is in your corner?
Oh, well, we're going to be talking about Birth of a Nation, the latest iteration of Birth of a Nation.
Yes.
And is art imitating life?
Ooh, interesting.
And can we separate the art from the artist? Talking about all the controversy that's been going on with Birth of a Nation, the movie itself, and the drama behind the scenes.
Interesting. And oh my god, we got a history corner for y'all.
History corner is back. It's like it's back from the past.
It is. It's just like the Taco Bell salad. It's back and it's delicious. Oh.
I can't wait. And then I've got a Quizlet corner that is all about that third debate, y'all.
Oh, here we go.
All right, let's jump into it. Bring me the gay shit.
That is your new catchphrase.
Bring me the gay shit. That's my thing. Put it on a t-shirt. Hashtag TM. TM means trademark, right? Not too much. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if hashtag TM is like telling people that it's a trademark.
Oh, like I'm hashtagging like step off. So you see this on the Twitters. Which, is Twitter working right now? That shit got shut down.
No, it wasn't working yesterday. It was down. The hackers were into it.
Hacking away. We need our, you know what we need? We need to sign up a team of Minority Corner hackers to protect the Minority Corner. I won't say empire, because that's not what we're going for, but community.
You know what? I'm into that.
I don't want them to, like, get into our episodes and, like, re-edit our stuff. So, like, we say, like, crazy shit. Like,
they're just protecting it. They're going to do a Mr. Robot and protect our shit.
Okay. Well, if you would like to sign up for the Minority Corner hacker team, hack for safety, then then tweet at us. But if the Twitter's down, send a pigeon or a smoke signal, and that would be the best way to
Don't send me a pigeon, cuz I don't like
them. Aneka's not a fan of pigeons. I hope you all enjoyed last week's backlog of episodes. We Frankensteined the shit out of an episode last week.
Oh my god, James did the most editing, supreme, sat on a train and edited. He was not a girl on a train, he was a boy on a train.
I was a boy on a train.
He was editing the shit out of this episode.
And I was less crazy than Emily Blunt was in that movie. Just boy on a train. I'm not going to lie, my movie Boy on a Train, not that exciting. It's just...
Because it's just you staring at a computer.
For 4 hours. I did get to go to the bathroom once. I had to crawl over...
Oh, drama.
I had to crawl over this girl who was not sitting next to her boyfriend. He was sitting next to me. And she kept like... It was just a weird... Something was rotten in that relationship. And I wanted to be like, sweetie, he's not that into you. But I had to...
But you did it.
I had to edit the podcast. I ain't got time for that. She's on her own.
It's true.
But Aneke... I would love to talk about, we were going to talk about this last week, but let's talk about it now. Aneke and I both gave each other a homework assignment, and it was
We had our homework,
Yes, it was to watch 13th, which is Ava DuVernay's new documentary.
It's on Netflix, you could check it out.
Yeah, did you know this about it? It was actually opened up the New York Film Festival, and it was the first time a documentary opened a film festival.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, and so, and she partnered with Netflix, and she just... wanting to get this movie out. So it's already out on Netflix.
It's watch it.
Yeah. So it's named 13th after the 13th Amendment, which freed the slaves. But as you learn from the documentary, and if you don't already know already, there's actually a clause within that 13th Amendment that says slavery is illegal except for essentially if someone is a prisoner, right?
Right. If you've been accused of a crime, convicted of a crime, then America can treat you however the hell they want to treat you.
Totally. Yeah. It's interesting because it's like the movie, it's like, I feel like for myself, the movie was like things that I already somewhat knew. I'd say I already knew about like 75% of the movie, but it's interesting the way that when they put it all together, like all of these elements and all of these things together at the same time, it's like, holy fuck, whoa. It's like mind blowing.
Right, exactly. Because in what we always say at the college level, whenever we're doing instruction, it takes repetition, you know, in order to like, if you hear one statistic once, you'll hear that and you'll be like, oh, interesting.
Right.
But if you hear it multiple times and then you see it within a context of what else is going on in the world with graphics and really kind of weaving it into our society, you truly understand it.
Totally. And like the stories that like that they had my girl, Angela Davis, my former professor from UC Santa Cruz, she was all up in there. Given her brilliant feedback as usual.
Love her.
And just to give like a little bit of context, like, so it starts with the beginning of like, interestingly enough, and I'll talk about this in my segment, but it started with Birth of a Nation, like the 1915 movie.
Right, by D.W. Griffith.
Yeah, and how that...
Racist.
Yes, and the movie's incredibly racist, and how it portrayed black people, and essentially white people's fears of black folks now that, like, and how these, like, you know, knights, essentially the KKK, would come and pretty much save America.
Yeah.
And just how those images...
From the menace of black people.
Totally, and how those images still exist today. And that those fears that white folks still have. And then what I love is that it charts, you know, from like, you know, Nixon's law and order to the war on drugs, tough on crime.
Yeah.
So Nixon, yeah. Bush, Clinton, and it just really like shows how the prison system has grown so much, how it specifically targets black and brown folks. It talks about the for-profit prisons and things that you were talking about, like how the new thing to watch out for is what we're doing with immigration and the language that Trump is using was the same sort of fear-mongering language that folks were using towards black folks in like the 50s.
It's so true. And a lot of the stuff I've noticed just by watching it is still connecting to the news today. Like they talk about the story of Emmett Till.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know, Emmett Till was a 14-year-old who was accused of flirting with a white woman. And he was basically... brutalized by these men, dragged from a car and then shot in the head. And his mother insisted on an open casket so the world could see it, which was brave and incredible. And the reason I'm bringing this up is right before we sat down to record today, I read a news article that the monument, the marker for where that shit went down about Emmett Till has been shot by 30 bullet holes.
Oh, no. Like, recently, today, this weekend?
Yeah.
Jesus.
This weekend. So this shit is still happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's good to watch it to just remember, you know? Like, if I hadn't watched the 13th recently, I would remember, oh yeah, Emmett Till, it's fucked up. That's sad. They shot it up. That's awful. But for some reason, because I had just seen those images, because I had just remembered what brutality has been going on in this country and connected it to the system of our prison system and why so many people of color are in prison.
Right.
It speaks heavier volumes and it makes it more of an urgent issue instead of just like, people are racist. It's because our system is fucked.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you mentioning that thing about urgency because, you know, the thing that the documentary made me think about was, you know, so many people today will say, like, you know, how did slavery happen or how did segregation or Jim Crow, like, I can't believe they used to do that. And here's the thing, our children are going to look back at us and say, how did we let mass incarceration happen?
Exactly.
Because it is that new thing they're going to look back and just see, like, how fucked up and how awful it was. And you know, that we have a modernized slavery today. And so what are we all doing to really, truly make this the land of the free?
Exactly. Amen to that. Like, can we be the generation that does something that changes it, that fucks some shit up?
Because it was
instead,
like,
of being so complicit?
Because it's literally, like, in the last, like, 20, 30 years that mass incarceration has grown at such a huge rate that we make up, like, what, like, 3%, 4% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prison population?
Yeah, 5%. United States is 5% of the world's population, yet we have 23% of imprisoned percentage of the world. I think that's what it is.
That's insane. So there's something that is completely sort of, you know, wrong with that.
Something's wrong.
And something that I'm going to touch upon too in the, like, later on, I'm going to, you know, I told you all I would share part of the reason why we took a break, but there is something that, you know, in the same way that we ask our cops, they're doing too much and we need to restructure that. Even the way that the people who are running the prison systems, we're asking them to do too much. It doesn't even make sense. Like, there should be counselors and social workers working to help and rehabilitate these folks who have been into prison. Mm. And some of these folks, like, and not criminalizing drug abuse, but treating it as a mental health issue. And so there's just an even internalized restructuring that does need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
I think that I think 13th is mandatory viewing to be an American citizen into the year 2016. Everybody must stop what you're doing and to put down your Gilmore Girls, stop Luke Cage. I know if you're like me, you have 3 episodes left. You got to press pause on it. Take the hour and 40 minutes. Stop the Black Mirror and go watch this. It's like mandatory viewing to really see, like, how America has been formed, especially post civil rights movement. Like, literally the ground that you're walking upon is all on the blood of this mass incarceration system. And so everyone, I like, for my personal self, I won't even have a conversation at this point with someone if, like, about racism, mass incarceration, war on drugs, or politics in general, because it's all this, everything that this movie talks about. So it's like,
right,
it's a check-in. It's like my litmus test. Oh, you want to talk about racism? And, oh, have you seen 13th? No? Okay. Let me know when you've seen it. I'm going to go.
It is entertaining, too.
It is, yeah.
It's entertaining. It's not like somebody yelling at you.
No.
It is, like, very visual. Ava DuVernay is a fucking mastermind.
So good. It's gripping.
Wonderful director.
Yeah.
It is, like, really engaging. They use lyrics from, like, hip-hop. They have hella people speaking on it. All different walks of life. It's good.
Man.
It's not like a lecture. It is a fucking good documentary.
It's actually probably even more entertaining than us talking about it, because you're just hearing our voices and our opinion. So go watch it. It's way more interesting than us. Hey, that's a lot. So kudos to you, Ava. This round goes to you, girl.
My corner, whoop, 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 my corner.
Oh, is that your new theme song?
It's aggressive.
I love it. It's so good. It's a little more, I'm more for your, you know, upbeat pop, you know, friendly ones.
Well, I'm now EDM, so you need to just deal with my change. Whoop, 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 my corner, my corner.
Oh yeah, it's a lot happening there. You're not gonna go country like Gaga?
No.
I listened to her new Joanne album and I am a fan, but you know,
really?
What did you listen to it?
I hear country. I mean, I shouldn't be so biased. I like country tunes, but when Gaga goes country, I'm kind of like you and I did not like that song.
I didn't like You and I either, but in the context of the Joanne album, everything fits, and it's actually like, it's like country rock, 80s rock, like it's, when Gaga goes country, that's what she should have named it. I'm a fan, check it out. Anyways, back to you, Woman in the Shaw.
Okay, you ready? I'm wearing a shawl right now. That's true.
I'm ready, nasty woman.
Okay. The Nobel Prize Awards were announced recently, and everybody is all a big kerfuffle because Bob Dylan won the Nobel Prize for Literature, and people are like, what the hell?
He wrote a book?
No, just for his song lyrics.
Oh, okay. I thought so you were gonna say. I thought you were gonna say no, and then it just was an accident that he won. But they're like, too late. We already announced it, and we gave it to him.
No, it was fully on purpose. People were like, what the hell? Some people are into it. I'm whatever. It makes sense to me because old dudes who are probably make up the council of the Nobel Prize fucking love themselves some Bob Dylan.
They do. And they were like, you know who needs one? Bob Dylan. You know? They're like, I was listening to his song, and I think that Bob Dylan
That's exactly
literature.
How it went.
Even though it's like his songs are more so like a series of poems, you know, but I guess, you know, that's literature. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's poetry. Songwriting is poetry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whatever. But so I'm not here to talk about Bob Dylan.
Oh, but can I just add this in? It's funny that you're talking about this. I saw the statue or a monument of Nobel.
Oh, when you were in Europe?
No, there's one in New York.
Oh.
It's by one of the museums. Where? I don't know. I was on my way to the Shake Shack to go get a burger. And then it was like, here's a statue of Nobel. Oh, it's not even a statue. It's just a monument, one of those penis things. And it's just there. And it's just like honoring Nobel. Oh. And then it's like faces on it. But it's not like a statue. It's just a monument.
Sure. That works. Good for Nobel.
So ironic and funny that you're now talking about it. It comes full circle. That's why I saw that monument. It's like I had a vision of the future. That's so ravened it.
It was a perfect illusion.
Ooh, nice tie-in. Okay. But seriously, what are we talking about? Ladies who get snubbed by Nobel?
Okay, so check it out. 11 people won the Nobel Award this year, right?
Yay.
And none of them were women.
How is that possible? Ladies, you got to get out. Did you not do anything this year, ladies? Except for run.
Why are you putting the blame on ladies?
Well, clearly you haven't done anything that's noteworthy enough. Otherwise, you would have won an award.
I can't even joke about it.
So far, I guess, I mean, Lemonade alone should have won a Nobel Peace Prize.
Okay, so let me give you some facts.
Okay, I love them.
So the Nobel Prize has been offered since 1901. So between 1901 to 2015, 579 prizes have gone to 911 laureates. Those are the people who win.
Okay.
Because multiple people can win for one topic, you know? So, 911 laureates. Out of that many, since 1901, 48 have been women.
Damn, you girls are behind.
You need to stop it. Stop it. Stop the jokes. Stop the jokes, James. You be serious with me right now. You know that it isn't women.
I'm curious, how many women are on the committee that choose this? Because that's, anytime there is a lack of a certain group of people who mysteriously are not winning something or being cast in something, they clearly are not, like, in the back seat. Like, they're not at the table to help make these decisions happen.
Exactly. Everybody needs a seat at the table so we get more diversity in our who we celebrate.
Which is why Solange made an album about it. Let's do it, folks.
So, what I decided to do today is, since there are only 48 women winners of the Nobel Prize, and I think that we all deserve to have a chance at a Nobel Prize because that shit is luxurious, I am going to name off 7 ladies who won.
Ooh, are these your 7 favorite ones?
They're not my favorite, but they're interesting, and they're not like the ones that you've heard of. Like, Toni Morrison won, she's good for her. And like Mother Teresa won.
Oh yeah, so you're doing the unsung lady heroes of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Ooh, I like that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was really good.
Mm-hmm. I still think Beyonce deserves a Nobel Peace Prize for like Lemonade.
I mean, you know, I love Beyonce. I love Beyonce, but I think that there are women that are doing a little bit more important things. Ooh, I said it.
You did. The beehive is going to be after you. Do not fuck.
I'm a part of the beehive.
Well, the bees are going to turn on you. Your own bees.
They need to, if they think that an album is more important than some of the things that I'm about to name off.
Okay. All right. So this is a starting point. So this is great. And you guys keep track at home and weigh it. Is this greater than Beyonce and Lemonade or not? And we'll see. All right. Okay.
I will say one thing. I think that if Bob Dylan won, then she should win.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was saying. That's what my saying. Okay. I also think that maybe the Nobel Peace Prize was maybe trying to get some more viewers and ratings and attention, so they threw in, like, Bob Dylan.
And I do have to correct you. So there, the Nobel Prize has several categories, and peace is just one of them.
Oh, who knew? See? Learning something every day. So you could get, like, a Nobel... Oh, so there's, like, the Nobel Literature Prize.
Yes.
And then there's, like, the Nobel Dance Prize.
No.
Oh, well, fuck that. Fuck you, Nobel.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
So the first woman to win a Nobel Prize was Marie Curie. Oh. She won twice. So the first time she won was in 1903 for physics. She won for her research on radiation. And then again in 1911 for chemistry because she discovered radium and polonium.
Damn. Way to go. I would say this is greater than lemonade.
And then, check this out, mm-hmm. The only mother-daughter duo to win, her daughter, Irene Jolie Curie, she won in 1935 for chemistry for the synthesis of a new radioactive elements.
That's hella great. She definitely lived up to her mom's, like, her mom was like, you need to get on this. What was her name?
And she's like, I'm on this.
She's like, Mom, I got this. I got this, Mom. Shit, I'm doing my shit. I got it. And she's like, good job, daughter. See, Dina Lohan, take lessons. Dina Lohan.
Both of them. This is how
you do it. Lindsay, Dina, I need to sit them down and we're going to make this movie and we're going to sit them down and we're going to say, that's how you do it, ladies. That's how you do it.
I love that you immediately went to the Lohans for this.
What do you think of mother-daughter duo? I mean, come on.
This is the only mother-daughter duo that you can think
of.
Or
like the Kardashians or whatnot, but I'm not into that game. So no, fuck I'm that. Focusing my attention with the Lohans.
Okay. So in 1945, Gabriella Mistral, she won it for literature for her lyric poetry inspired by powerful emotions, which to me sounds a little bit like Lemonade for 1945.
See, I'm telling you, Beyonce deserves one. That's probably where Mariah Carey got her song idea for Emotions, was from she read this literature piece, and then she wrote the song Emotions.
She was like, theory. Thank you, Gabriella Mistral, in her liner notes.
She did. It's look, go to the Wikipedia page, it's there.
It's written in the shape of a butterfly.
Oh, see, Mariah, see, Mimi, she does it all.
Okay, so in 1993, Rigoberta Menchu, she won for peace. For her work for social justice and ethnocultural reconciliation for the rights and respects for indigenous people.
Nice. Awesome. I just want to point out, just in case you get, remember, Aneka's just doing the top seven that she wanted to choose from. It doesn't mean that 1940 to 1993, there were no other female winners, right?
Yeah, no, I'm just picking them out.
Because I almost, my heart almost sank. I was like, wait, you're telling me there was like a 40-year drought of ladies winning? But okay.
Well, I mean, I have to tell you, it's pretty, I mean, 48 out of 911 winners, there's some gaps.
I mean, that's true.
There's some gaps.
It sort of reminds me, like, let's say there are 11 winners and they're like, oh, we need diversity, and they choose one woman. You know, like how, like, we talked about this before, how, like, there's, like, a team of people, and there's, like, five of them. They're like, we got the black guy. We got the woman. Diversity. Right. That, like, woman counts as, like, diversity or something.
It's like, I just don't feel like people are looking, they're not casting a wide enough
net.
Agreed. You know?
Yeah, because the ladies are doing it. So
it's true. I do have to say, I have to give them credit that the list was more diverse than I expected it to be.
Okay, that's good. That's nice. Yeah. That's a step. But there should be more.
Yes. Okay, two more. Linda Buck, in 2004, she won for medicine for the discovery of the odorant receptors and the organization of the olfactory system. So I'm picking, like, obscure things because I feel like a lot of times these names of people who are doing big damn deals are looked over for the Bob Dylans of the world, you know?
Yeah, because here's the thing. I thought little old me, who, you know, I'm just doing my thing, and I just read a little headline here and there, and I just assumed Bob Dylan won the Nobel Peace Prize, and that there's only one a year. I didn't know that there's all these other folk, like these other awards or whatnot. So they need to, they need to specify.
Yes, because he did not win the Peace Prize. He won for literature. Mm. And I don't know who won the Peace Prize this year.
See? And like Bob Dylan just overshadowed whoever won the Peace Prize, which I think is the most important because that means that they are the harbinger of peace.
Right. I agree with you. I completely agree with you. Okay, let me do one more.
Okay.
To Yu Yu. She won last year in 2015, so go her.
Congrats.
For medicine.
Nice.
And she discovered some therapy that works to get rid of malaria.
Oh, wow. Damn.
You know? So that's great. That's a pretty big deal with several parts of this world.
She is going to be putting Mandy Moore out of a job.
Wait, what is oh, yeah, Mandy Moore's like...
Is Mandy Moore has a
Johnny Appleseeding malaria nets around the world? Is that what she...
In a nutshell, yes. Mandy Moore has a series of commercials about donate money to get malaria nets to the world. But
that's
we
good.
Won't,
good
we won't,
for Mandy Moore.
Mandy Moore is stepping it up, so I appreciate that. And soon we won't have to see her commercials anymore because this lady is going
to
cure
to
it.
To you.
So, awesome.
So, basically, that was just to wet everybody's whistle. Go research. If you want to learn more about the Nobel Prize, you should look into it. It's based out of Sweden. You get to invite, like, 100 of your favorite family and friends to go with you to have this big crazy dinner. You get like $1 million.
What? 100 of your closest friends? And that's,
I think so.
That's fucked up because think about like, okay, you get to invite 100 people and the people who did not get invited are like, really? You invited 100 people and I didn't get to go to no Sweden?
You know what that's like though, James? That's like having a wedding.
Exactly. But this is...
I went on an apology tour after I had my wedding being like, I'm sorry, I just couldn't.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They only let me invite 100 people.
I know.
I just... sorry. But you let Johnny from the second grade? You invited him? Well, he's...
Well, we still talk on the weekend, so you need to step it up as a friend.
That's true. See? Step it up. And Nikki, thank you so much for sharing this, because especially just the numbers are shocking and alarming, and I'm disappointed in Nobel. I will never look at your monument the same ever again. In fact, I'm not going to look at it. When I go to Shake Shack next time, I'm going to walk in the other direction. I don't care that it's going to take me 2 minutes longer. I don't care. Because I'm supporting my ladies. I'm not having it.
You take a stand.
I am.
I appreciate your stand that you're doing.
I am going to walk an extra 2 minutes out of my way so
just
I'm going
to
see your statue.
Just to avoid a monument.
Not having it, Nobel. Well, let's get more ladies on the ballot. Give them their prizes. Lemonade, you need a Nobel Peace Prize. So does the Lohans. Step it up.
Literature.
Oh. It just rolls off the tongue, though. Nobel Peace.
It does.
Like
It's comforting.
But
it's
I
like a sandwich.
It is. Well, the Lohans, I think they deserve a Nobel Peace Prize one day. I'm going to groom them. I am going to My Fair Lady them into you. I'm going to she's all that it. I'm going to My Fair Lady them into your future Nobel Peace Prize winners. So
good luck.
Place your bets. Place your bets.
I am not betting on that horse.
Birth of a nation, life imitating art, or art imitating life. Can we separate the artist from the art? I don't know. Let's find out.
I don't know.
She don't know.
No.
You don't know. I don't know.
Okay, so James, I am curious.
Was that Christina Aguilera or Jennifer Hudson?
Maybe it was their love child.
It was Jennifer Aguilera.
That sounds like somebody I went to like middle school with.
You did. She's not doing well. She is not doing well. Time was not good to her. I saw a recent photo of her on the Facebooks.
Harsh.
She partied a little too hard in community college, and which is no shame to that. But
no
she
shame.
Just, you know, no shame, but I thought more of her. I really thought more of her. She had a good voice.
She still has a way to go. She'll be fine. She just needs a couple more years.
She needs to stop smoking all them cigarettes. She drinks too much.
You guys, just in case, Jennifer Aguilera does not exist.
Jennifer Aguilera, if you are listening, we don't know you.
We don't know you. I'm sure you're doing great.
As far as in our mind, you are the Jennifer Lopez to our Mariah Carey. and we don't know you.
We don't know you, but we like you. I've never heard of you.
This is a great reference. You are the Jennifer Lopez to my Mariah Carey. I don't know you.
I don't.
Damn. All right, wait, you were going to say something. Okay.
Well, I'm excited that you're talking about Birth of a Nation because I have not seen it. I felt kind of weird about seeing it because of all the controversy surrounding it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious for you to break it down for me.
So I had, and this is interesting, the episode is chronologizing my day that I had 2 weeks ago. So I woke up in the morning, watched 13th, and then I went to the movie theater to watch Birth of a Nation. And I was on the same page as Aneke because I wasn't sure if I was going to see it because of the controversy surrounding Birth of a Nation. So we talked about this earlier. There was the 1915 version of Birth of a Nation. And then I was super excited because this Nate Parker, he is the writer, producer, and director of this new version of...
And star,
yeah. Of this new version, Birth of a Nation, which I was so fascinating that he was reclaiming, you know, this black man reclaiming... this title to tell this movie and the story.
We were excited.
So excited. I've been seeing the trailers for this since like January. And it's the retelling of Nat Turner, who was a slave back in 1831. And he led this huge slave insurrection where the slaves revolted and they murdered and killed a bunch of like their white slave masters. So
crazy.
This movie was coming out. Like, so it had just went to, it set records at Sundance, and it got a standing ovation at Sundance before they even played the movie, because this happened right around hashtag #OscarsSoWhite. And so people were just like...
Oh, wait. So people did a standing ovation before the movie? I thought it was after.
Oh, I read that it was sometime before the movie was even screened. Wow. They were just like so excited. I think it was like everyone felt hella guilt, I guess, after hashtag #OscarsSoWhite. Yeah. And so then, of course, there was a huge bidding war over this film. Like, there was people were just wanting it because they were like, we are not going to make that same mistake this, you know. And it had Oscar bait written all over it. People love a good historical drama, especially slavery drama. They love it.
They love it. People love it. I mean, Amistad, people love that.
So some of you might be thinking, well, what's the deal? This sounds great. What happened? Well, back in the 90s, Nate Parker, he was accused of, him and his wrestling teammate, Gene Kleston, were accused of raping a female student back at Penn State. And this is back in the 90s.
And I have to say that this guy that he was accused with is a part of this movie, right?
Oh.
I think he co-produced the movie.
Yes. Here's the thing. There's a lot of craziness involving this story. And Parker was found, he was found not guilty. And this other guy, he was found guilty. But that verdict was eventually overturned. And then the woman ended up committing suicide in 2012. And this is after she had actually, like, over the years, had, like, other attempts.
Mm. Whether this happened or didn't happen, there was a breakdown somewhere. This is a conversation about rape and consent, right?
Exactly.
There's also a conversation of race that's also taking place into here, right? Because you even just have, so this was, like, two black men, and this was a white woman.
Mm.
And there's also just, like, hyper-masculinity around them being on a sports team together as well. You know, it was interesting because, you know, there was this women's feminist group that was obviously a complete support of the survivor, right? But then you had the campus's Black Caucus who, you know, they were upset because this guy's the jury that convicted his friend Gene Kleston, it was a jury of all white people except, you know, his jury of his peers was, you know, all white people and one black person. And you think, like, does that really matter? But, you know, we can't help but think how sometimes maybe race does play into certain biases that we have. There was a lot of things that happened within the case that, you know, there were two of their wrestling teammates that said that they did do it, but then later came back and said that they were threatened by the police to make that statement.
Oh my God.
And I'll talk about this later, but I had an encounter with the police, and there's so many variables and things that happened here.
Right.
So there's all of this drama and there's all of this controversy happening behind it, right?
Yeah.
This has happened like 16 years ago, right? And Oprah Winfrey tried to help Nate Parker. She saw the movie, she loved it, and she wanted to help him get ahead of this.
Yeah.
And because she was like, this is when the news first broke out about it, because she didn't want, she felt like this story was really important, which it is. This the story that Birth of a Nation is telling is so incredibly important.
It's huge.
But Oprah Winfrey knows the system and knows the game.
It's Oprah.
She needs, she's like, you need to get ahead of this, sit down with my girl Gail, and get ahead of this. Parker was upset that he was even having to talk about this. He was like, for him, he was like, this is just going to die down. He's like, I'm done with this. I don't want to talk about it. I was wrongly accused. Yada, yada, yada.
Number one mistake. When Oprah reaches a hand to you, you grab that hand and you let her lift you up.
Yes. You don't turn. Oprah knows the business. So that was his first mistake. And and so Fox Searchlight, who they purchased the rights to the movie, and this was like, this was their, they were backing this movie for their Oscars. Like, this had their Oscar bait all over it. They've now switched over putting their money behind, what's her face? Natalie Portman's Jackie O movie. Looks really good.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen the trailer? Looks
good. I haven't seen the trailer. I need to see it.
So, and they hired this Olivia Pope-like team to be his PR and to, like, you know, handle it. They handled this NFL player, Don McPherson, who is also a sexual violence activist, to get Parker on message. But by this point, it was too late.
Yeah.
Like, the stories were already circulating. Things were just so late. He didn't want to talk about it.
And he said and dumb things again, in the media. He referred to the victim in not so nice terms, too, and was flippant about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems to me like instead of, okay, I don't know what happened. I don't. But
we weren't there.
It seems like But it seems like no matter what, this is an opportunity for men or even in Donald Trump's bus pussycat situation, or not pussycat, wait, pussygate situation. Is
pussycat? Yes. There we go. Yeah.
Similar to Donald Trump's bus pussygate. So have a conversation about, like, how we talk about women.
Yes.
How we treat women.
Yes.
That the fact that this is a conversation that we have to have because it's all too common, right?
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, women are not lying about rape. And I'm not saying he did it. I'm not saying he didn't. But that is part of the conversation.
That is.
Right?
That's
and
exactly
so Nate
a part
Parker
of the conversation.
Could have came to the table and said, this is a thing that does happen. Right?
Yes.
And instead of just not wanting to talk about it, like I can't imagine what it was like to go through the trial and whether he did it or whether he didn't. And so maybe there was some trauma that happened for it on his sake, not wanting to relive it. But it's an opportunity to have a conversation, and I think men need to be more involved in having this conversation and stop raping women. Like, that's what it comes down to.
Thank you. I agree. Thank you. Completely. And I'm laughing out of uncomfortableness because I'm surprised that this is still a point of conversation. Like, it's a no brainer to me.
True, right. Well, around all this controversy, obviously the movie, it did not do well. It I think only made $7.1 million in its opening weekend, and considering the amount of, like, exposure and the costs of marketing or whatnot, it actually was lower than the opening weekend of Free State of Jones with Matthew McConaughey, which is a Civil War epic back in June.
Right.
Which, like, some people are like, okay, I'm tired of, like, you know, some black folks are like, listen, I don't want to see another slavery movie, I'm over it, which I understand.
Right.
But I do think, like, if, you know, if white folks keep getting to tell their, you know, Civil War movies and World War One movies and all these sort of things,
right,
like, I think it is a part of American history, and there's a lot of different stories to tell, and I thought this is a very fascinating, interesting story to tell. And also, black people, I give y'all a pass on slavery films because I get it.
Right.
It's, you know, traumatizing, and you don't necessarily want to watch that, so I totally get it. Although Birth of a Nation did do very well in black communities in terms of, like, movie theaters in black communities did really well.
Interesting. So black people are going to see
it. Folks like to see it.
Well,
because also I think, like, when else do we get to see black people in a movie aside from, like, you know,
Madea
what's
movies.
That movie with Morris? Or, no, the one that we just watched, like, Go Tell Your Wife.
Bow Break?
Yeah. Go Tell Your Wife, Morris Messes Up. Bow Breaks.
And it's true. And this was supposed, I still am so bummed out because this was such, like, it was going to be a poetic, artistic, Oscar Beatty movie, which is something, like you just mentioned, we don't get to see enough black cast in.
No.
I was a little disappointed to hear that he changed the history.
Yes.
So I don't know if you're going to cover that.
Yeah, I am, actually. So what I want to do is I want to talk about, now I want to talk about, like, well, how was the movie, right? So it got...
Yeah, because you saw
it. I saw it. So it got an A on CinemaScore. I would give it a B. I would give it...
Oh, okay, a B. B. Okay.
And here's... Okay. I don't think, like, not every war movie is amazing, right? Not every history movie is, like, a knock out of the park. They're not all going to be 12 Years a Slave. So, like, how does the movie treat women? And I think it's fascinating because I think it connects to Nate Parker. I think his heart was in the right place. So there are 5 women in speaking roles. So yay.
Okay.
Kind of passing a bit of the Brechtel test, but none of the women, I don't think they really spoke to each other. And if they did speak to each other, it was about Nate Parker's character, Nat Turner.
So it was not passing the test at all.
Well, no, it passed, because it's the 3 points, like at least gets a few points, right? Like it doesn't get a...
Okay.
5 women, they have... speaking, they have names, they speak, but there's no scene with just the women talking about, so it's like 2 out of 3, it gets 2 out of 3 points. So, but all the women only kind of just seem to serve up the male character and really setting up Nate Turner as like this hero that like it was prophesized that he was going to do this, you know, great thing. But then there's 2 rapes that do happen in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is interesting, given Nate Parker's history with rape. And also keep in mind the title Birth of a Nation, which the original Birth of a Nation had, the 1915 version had a white woman fleeing a black man because he was trying to rape her and she jumped off the cliff because she didn't want to be raped. And then the white knights, the KKK, go find this man and, you know, lynch him or whatnot.
Horrible racist movie.
And the original,
which is why I was excited that he... change the title, because Birth of a Nation now can have the possibility of representing something that wasn't so detrimental to black people.
Right. And there is the rape of black women, two black women in this movie, and it's done by like a group of white guys, and then this other, it was like a business deal. So Gabrielle Union plays one of these characters, Esther. So, and Esther, who is one of the women who is raped in the movie, she doesn't speak at all. And once again, sadly, I think, like, in one way, Nate Turner was trying to flip the script and was like, well, actually, back then, in these times, like, it was the white men who, they had all this fear about black men raping, you know, white women, when, in reverse, like, rape was a huge part of slavery. Sadly, it was a huge, huge part of how black women were treated, how they would use it to grow their, like, how they would use it to increase the amount of slaves that they would have. There were breeding farms.
Yeah, I mean, here's some facts.
These are facts, right?
I did a DNA test. I'm 23% European descent. That's from, let's be honest, that's from slavery, from rape.
Yeah, there's a lot of black people who have some sort of, you know, European descent in it, and it was not through consensual love.
No.
Maybe there was like the one off case that maybe happened, but for the most part, it's just, these are the facts. The women were raped. They also used to rape men in front of their families and to try to set an example. And so I feel like he was trying to tell that story, but the problem is he was still doing it from his just bro-society sort of mind, right? His male, you know, his hyper-toxic masculinity self, because sadly, like, for instance, in Gabrielle Union's character's case, when it's happening, there's 3 male characters, they all know this is happening, and our focus and attention is just on them and their faces and their reaction. And she comes out, she's crying, and she has to, like, sort of lift her husband up just as much, like, it's almost just as much about how much it affects the husband. And the same thing happens when Nat Turner, his wife, she's, you know, raped and beaten by, like, these 3 white guys, and... it serves as a catalyst point for the revenge to take place. So once again, it's not about the story of like what these women have to go through. And that's what like people keep getting wrong when they keep using like rape in the stories that they're telling, where it becomes, it's not about the man. It's not about the husband. It's not about the brother.
Thank you.
It's not about the dad. It is about the woman. And that's where the story.
Right.
Let's talk about her experience and her journey.
Yes.
It's not about, oh man, now I'm upset and I'm going to, you know, do something about it. They don't. And that's the thing, is that they just had the women being, you know, victimized.
Plot devices.
Exactly. Plot device. And none of the women were very dimensional at all. The men go off and they avenge the women, and the women have to stay behind, which doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't they go fight and kill as well?
Yeah.
And according to historians, And Nat Turner's own account, the rebellion was not spurred by, because they were like, oh, we're going to avenge these rapes. It was because he saw an eclipse happen, and he took that as, he was a highly religious man, and he saw an eclipse happen, and that he took that as a religious call to arms.
And that could have been beautifully done in a movie.
Well, no, that is in there. That is there. But it's after, like, these two other events happen. And so
it just feels weird that he had that in his history and he used it as such a focal point in the movie. That's what's weird to me.
He also kind of, to me, in my opinion, and I I'm appreciative that the story happened and it existed. I think that his heart was in the right place. I think that he went about it, doing it in the wrong way. And in some ways, I think he was trying to flip the script of, like, you know, he was a black man accused of raping a white woman, which that's exactly what the original black, that's exactly what the original Birth of a Nation was about. Like, look at the connecting layers in between here. He then flipped the script and was like, no, like, the white men are raping our black women, and they have been doing that throughout history.
Right.
And it's weird because, like, he doesn't shy away at all from, like, there are scenes in this movie that I've never seen. I thought, like, 12 Years a Slave put a new light onto slavery, but this movie was, it was like, there's scenes that are like, it's like Saw. It's like, it's so gross and so painful and so visceral and raw. But I think it's important to visually see how terrible it was. But then when it comes to the two, if that's the case, but then he shied away from showing the violence that happened to the women and just focused on the males, you know, suffering through having to see that happen. And on one end, I'm appreciative that he didn't show it because I feel like you just see, you know, rape casually used all the time.
Right. Game of Thrones, but then, hello.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's exactly it. And that's why I stopped watching Game of Thrones. So it's there's a lot happening here. I think, he did kind of comment that, you know, he was 19 and he understands the idea of consent much differently than he does now. He does feel terrible that, you know, this woman, he didn't know until this year that she had killed herself. Her family's upset that, like, the New York Times tried to pull this, you know, story back into the limelight when her family was already trying to deal and heal with this.
Right.
You know, I just want to kind of, again, I think that this was a missed opportunity. And the same thing with, like, Chris Brown, you know, everything that he, you know, when he beat up Rihanna, right? That was an opportunity for a man to come forward and say, we need to talk about how we treat women. I made a mistake.
Yes.
Think about if Donald Trump would have came forward and instead of saying, I'm sorry if you were offended for his comments on the bus, if he would have came forward and said, you know what? In the past 10 years, I've learned so much about, you know, I was inappropriate.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, my wife has taught me how to appropriately think about women, and we as a country need to talk about how we treat women and how we talk about them and how we think about them. And this was an opportunity, whether Nate Parker did it or not, it was a missed opportunity. I feel like he was so kind of caught up into his ego, I'm going to say this. I think his heart was in the right place of wanting to tell the story, but the fact that, like, the movie sets him, his character up as a savior, right?
Yeah.
And he wrote it, he directed it, he produced it. And so it's just a lot of this, like, everyone pushing him forward or whatnot.
Yeah, it's weird.
Whether you did it or not, there was still an opportunity to say, hey, yeah, rape does happen in this country and we need to talk about it. We need to address it. And men, you know, consent is really important. I've learned and I've grown from this instead of just being so ego driven that when Oprah fucking Winfrey comes and tells you need to do something, you fucking do it.
You need to do it. Like, I love that you're bringing up the one aspect of the appropriate apology because it needs to be done where I feel like we as an audience are happy to understand and accept where people have messed up in the past as long as they're honest and truthful and approach it in a better way. Like, it can be done. If he, like, exactly what you were saying, if he was honest, truthful, upfront, apologetic, humble, we would be celebrating this movie right now.
Yeah, and it sucks because, like, you know, a lot of the cast, you know, they're out there trying to promote the movie. They don't want to talk about, you know, his scandal or whatnot. But as the eclipse, oddly, ironically enough, because the eclipse is what triggered this revolt to happen, it has eclipsed the story that should be told and that people do need to see. And I understand. I'm going to leave it and close this. I'm going to let Gabby Union have the last word on this.
Okay.
Since her character was silent in it. And Gabrielle Union, who still looks like she is like 20 years old.
I love her.
And I'm sorry you're going through craziness. The BET with being Mary Jane, they're like doing some crazy shit with her money and her contract, but that is another story. We support you, Gabby. Gabby Gabs, you come on this podcast and we will just hug you. And you can talk about
Dwayne Wade, your cutie husband, and that beautiful ass wedding that you guys had. So
we want to hear about it. Also, you know, she's open about, you know, she is a rape survivor.
Yes.
And she understands, like, she couldn't really promote the movie. And she said she hopes that this will open the door around conversation and dialogue about rape culture, misogyny, and toxic masculinity. And she says, I support you if you don't want to see the film. So I wanted to let her have the last word on it. And also, again, this is a call to arms to men. You need to step your game up in these conversations because y'all are the ones that are doing this and you need to stop and you need to speak out and you need to shut it the fuck down. I want to see all the men at these rallies and these take back nights. Like, well, take back the afternoon or something. Let the ladies take back the night themselves. And you can be there. Don't speak. Don't take up, you know.
There's a time and a place. Time and a place.
But men do need to, I feel like there needs to be an organization. It needs to be a big rally cry of like, this is bullshit. We're going to stop doing this. And we're going to call each other out.
We're
going to support these women. So I want to see that.
So what's Gabby's final word?
Oh, I just said it. I support you if you don't want to see the film.
Oh. I thought there was more.
Okay. No, that was it. I support you if you don't want to see the film. That's it. Okay. Nothing poetic. I know.
Okay. All right. We got a history corner.
Back, forth and forth. Back. History. Back. Taking it back. Take off your pants and put it back.
Sure. So, we have a history corner. We're back in action. If you heard our last episode, James put in one of our notorious history corners where we got into a fight about Tesla.
Tesla. She was really into it. I wasn't impressed. I still stand by those remarks.
And I thought I would do a little nod towards that.
You are trying to provoke me. No, not at all.
You've been watching too much CNN,
and you're like, for ratings, you're like, you know what's been popular on CNN? Fights. So you're gonna stir the pot.
Okay, so I thought I would pick a day in the end of October, October 21st, to do a this day on.
Nice.
So October 21st, 1879, Thomas Edison successfully tested an electric incandescent lamp with a carbonized filament at his lab in Menlo Park, New Jersey, and he was able to keep it lit for 13 hours.
Did he steal this from Tesla? But didn't he steal this?
Thomas Edison is a bitch, and I still think that. And I think that he stole a lot of shit from Tesla, but he also stole something from somebody else, and we're about to get into it.
Uh-oh. He be stealing shit.
Because I think that's great, and everybody likes to talk about the light bulb and how, you know, Thomas Edison, blah, blah, doo-doo day.
I'm using one right now. Thanks, Edison. On, off.
Me too,
on,
but no.
Off,
on, hold on.
Off. Uh-oh.
You will be thanking somebody else by the end of this history corner.
Okay, tell me who.
I want to talk about Lewis Latimer.
Who?
Huh?
I said who?
Yeah, get ready.
Oh.
He was born in 1848 to parents who fled slavery 6 years before he was born.
Mm-hmm.
So he's black, obviously.
Oh, that's where that's going. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, these black slaves had a white baby. No.
No.
Okay. I know.
So, first of all, just think of that. Think about if your own parents fled slavery, then 6 years later you were born.
But these are the these are the people that I am so fascinated about in this time period. Even people who were like freed, it was like, what do you do next? Or like you ran away, like what do? Where do you go?
Exactly. They opened up a barbershop.
Oh, right, yeah.
But okay, so Lewis Latimer was born to these parents. They were great. In 1865, he began to, so basically, long story short, he worked with his parents. They thought he was great. His dad eventually, he got captured, and Frederick Douglass argued his freedom's behalf. So these people were like plugged. in.
Where the fuck is Frederick Douglass's movie? But I digress.
Exactly. Where is Frederick Douglass's movie? I would watch that.
Starring me. And then Donald Glover could be my best friend sidekick.
Sure, I like that. What about Speaking me? Speaking
of, a plug for Donald Glover. He's in the new Han Solo movie. He'll be playing Lando Calrissian. What?
Yeah, but what about me in this movie?
Okay. Yeah, we'll have you audition.
Okay, I'll send the sides over. Moving on. In 1865, Louis Latimer,
You could play my wife.
Thanks. Okay, so in 1865, Louis Latimer, he decided or got a job working in a firm for patent lawyers. And he was so good at what he did. And this is after he served in the Civil War and was, like, in the Navy. So he's already done a lot, and he's a young-ass man doing this shit.
Right.
So he's working at the firm of the patent lawyers, and he learned drafting. And he got so good at drafting that he began to draft his own blueprints. And he created his own types of inventions where he invented how to, like, have a proper toilet on a train, among some other things. Wow. And he got so good that he caught the eye of Alexander Graham Bell.
Oh,
and Louis Latimer, this motherfucker, he drew up the original blueprints to the telephone.
Fuck you, Thomas Edison. Get out of my face.
Well, that was Alexander Graham Bell.
Oh, well, fuck you, Bell. Because you be getting, oh, I get it, Pacific Bell. Get out of my face with that. You know what it should be called? Vladimir Phone. Phone.
There we go. I agree. But wait.
I got my Vladiphone.
There is more, James. So I'm going back to the original story where Thomas Edison created that stole the idea from Tesla, had his people figure it out, but then he created a light bulb that lasted for 13 hours, and that was in 1879.
Right.
In 1880, so the next year, Latimer moved to Connecticut, and he started working with this one guy named Hiram Maxim, who was literally like Thomas Edison's biggest rival in terms of creating like the best light bulb.
Wow.
And Latimer straight up developed a way to encase the filament in a light bulb with cardboard, which prevented the carbon from breaking up and therefore provided a longer life to a light bulb. And it made his invention made the light bulb, one, cheaper, and two, more efficient because it lasted longer than just one damn day. So after his invention, they were able to put light bulbs in street lamps and have them installed in homes.
Wow.
So literally, that light bulb in your home is from Louis Latimer, not Thomas Edison.
Because Thomas Edison just came up with this thing that was not practical. And then Blackman was like, I'm going to help you out because this is not helpful and we need to get this into our homes. Yes. Did you see what I did with the toilets on the train? I hooked it up. That you can take a poop and travel across the country, which I appreciate all the time. Because I took a train recently from Boston to back here to New York. And I appreciated that I could pee on the train. So thank you, black man.
Louis Latimer. We're talking on the phone right
because
now.
Louis Latimer
has us illuminated in our house, talking on our phone and pooping on trains. So thank you so much.
Literally. All of my favorite things and all the things that I do a lot. So thank you. I'm going to turn my light on and off for you in honor of you. Off, on, boom. And this goes back to like how a lot of this shit, like there's so much, we talked about this before. Mm-hmm. How this shit's been invented by black people.
Right.
And black people cannot get the patents for things.
Exactly.
Because we weren't really a human being still. And you know, white people would just be like, oh, I'm going to take this. Oh, I made that.
And the only
thanks
way
for your ideas
that Louis Latimer got in there is because he ended up at a job in a patent office. Like, Jesus. So thank you, Louis Latimer.
Thank you, Louis Latimer. And Edison, I'm no fan of you. Get out of my face. I haven't been a fan of him since The Simpsons did an episode about Edison and how he was just a dick. A fucking dick.
Yeah, so that's why I'm on Tesla's side.
Well, I never said I wasn't. I just wasn't impressed with his predictions and his pigeon girlfriend. So,
well, everybody has a dark side.
I still stand by that. Agree to disagree. The pundits will agree to disagree this way.
And don't yuck his yum about his pigeon girlfriend.
I'm going to leave that one right there.
Okay.
Quizlet Corner. Third fucking duh, babe. So, Aneke, I'm assuming I love you, and because I love you, I know you, and yes. I see you, and I hear you.
Yes.
I'm assuming you did not watch the debate.
I did not.
It is the end of the trilogy. I am so glad this shit is over. I'm done. It was very hard to get through the rest of it, but it's done. So this is all about the debate. Since you didn't watch it, you'll have to figure out which one of these did not happen.
Okay.
All right. In an effort to throw Hillary Clinton off during the debate, Donald invited President Obama's half-brother Malik Obama from Kenya, who's endorsed Donald Trump, to be on as his guest at the debate, sitting him in the front row. Could not be true. Donald is hell-bent on stopping Hillary's crusade that will allow you to rip the baby out of the womb on the ninth month of the final day. Could be true, could not be true. The debate could be true, could not be true. The debate heated up around issues of LGBT equality, showing Donald's shaky ground with the gays and highlighting his running mate's terrible stance on LGBTQ rights. Could be true, could not be true. Hillary Clinton is a nasty woman. Much like Miss Jackson causing the song Nasty to spike 250% on Spotify. Could be true.
We are simple people in America. We are simple people.
I don't know. It could be false. Maybe it went down.
Okay, all right.
Last one. Through all three debates, Hillary Clinton slyly and carefully wore red, blue, and then white, resembling the American flag and or Death Row Records. Which one is not true?
LGBTQ issues.
What? I can't. How did you pick that one out? Oh,
because
man.
Because I read the news. I don't watch the debate, but I know a headline.
Okay. Yeah, I am. I sat through three fucking debates, and I even watched the spinoff, the VP debate. I saw all of it.
Yeah.
And I am livid because not once did they ever talk about anything LGBTQ. And on one
or
end.
Or climate change.
Or climate change, yeah. And so maybe on one end, it's like, okay, maybe, you know, we're. Because, you know, public opinion is pretty much like solidly in favor of marriage equality, right? So, okay.
Okay.
Maybe we're just another voting bloc. And because, you know, Trump during the RNC did promise protection to the LGBTQ community.
Is that how he said it?
That's exactly how he said it. Like, he's never uttered these words out before, right? But here's the thing. Because of intersectionality, surprise, LGBT community is hella diverse. So when he says terrible shit about women, Muslims, African Americans, Latinos, he is attacking the LGBT community, right? So we're still involved in the conversation. That's why I'm super surprised that, like, there's 20% of LGBTQ people who are even supporting Donald, right? But I'm gotta wager they're probably white male gays, right? So, yeah. Yep. And so it's so frustrating because we spend so much time on those fucking emails on Pussygate and all this other bullshit that, like, other issues got pushed off to the side, you know?
Exactly.
And, like, even, like, racism was only talked about on the first debate, racism and police shootings. And it's a huge thing that's happening right now in the country. And no one brought up his running mate Pence's stance on all this shit. That, like, Pence supported a constitutional amendment to ban marriage equality. He signed a bill to jail same-sex couples for applying for marriage licenses. He wanted to divert funding from HIV prevention to conversion therapy. He opposed repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, complained about the passage of the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill, served on the board of an anti-gay group, and argued that passing EDNA would ban Bibles from the workplace. And I couldn't believe that, you know, Kane didn't attack him for any of this shit. Like, I'm sad and disappointed that, like, I guess, like, you know, maybe Democrats feel that, you know, LGBTQ folks are already voting for them and that black folks are already voting for them. But you know what? Still speak up and let us know that you're going to be representing us, because you know what? We're going to call you on this shit. And if you don't just assume that we're going to vote for you, because literally all Republicans have to do is stop being crazy on moral issues and just talk about smaller government and small taxes, and you might perk up the ear of some folks. And also treat women better.
It's, That's why I can't watch the debates, because it's just been a circus surrounding issues that don't concern me, that I'm not, I mean, they do concern me, but I feel like it's just turned into a shit show where people aren't talking about the true issues that are out there, like what you said. Mike Pence is a menace.
He's a monster.
He's a monster.
And he's a heartbeat away from becoming the president. Like, if Donald would have won, you know, it won't.
This is a man who literally signed a law that women had to have funerals for miscarriages.
Yeah,
so,
go fuck yourself.
Like, these are big issues. The fact that nobody's talked about LGBTQ issues.
They did talk about abortions, and Hillary, like, she spoke beautifully on it. And it makes sense because she's a woman, and I feel like she has, like, finally it was nice seeing a woman on the stage talking about a woman's right to choose, and it made complete sense. And what Donald Trump was talking about, that 9-month abortion, that's called a fucking C-section, you dumbass. It's a fucking C-section. They're not ripping a baby out and then murdering it at 9 months. It's a C-section. And also paying attention to, you know, Alabama, just in case you guys are not aware, which is breeding ground of the KKK, epicenter of the civil rights movement. There's about a dozen probate judges in at least 8 different counties who have denied marriage licenses to all couples since the Supreme Court ruling on gay marriages. So nobody's getting, because they're like, they're not showing bias. They're just not letting anyone get married because gays can get married. So, fuck off.
I have to put a finger on, I'm not sure about the C-section versus 9-month abortion. There might be a difference there. I just need to do research before I know the difference.
Not me. All right. Well, you won. Okay. Just tweet me or something. I'll look at it. Let me know. All right. Well, you won Quizzit Quarter. I'm shocked and surprised.
But did I win?
You know what? James? Nobody wins this Quizzit Corner. We all fucking lose. Good question. Good thing. I'm sad. We all lost today. This is the saddest Quizzit Corner we've ever had. I'm going to go cry now. So I just wanted to take a moment and catch everyone up on why we took a break. And thank you to you for being so supportive and understanding.
Of course, because we love you.
Thank you. So about a week ago, Sunday morning, I got home from the bars around 5 a.m. And I saw a bunch of sirens and a ton of police and a body laying outside of my building in what looked like a pool of blood. So remember the day that I had, right? I saw the documentary 13th.
Yeah.
And I saw Birth of a Nation. Yeah. So there's a lot of heavy things involving in my head, especially the treatment of black people in this country. And I assumed, seeing the whole entire situation, that it was another shooting of an unarmed black man just right outside my own building. So they had just started setting up the caution tape, and I was like, hey, can I go up into my apartment? They're like, which one are you in? I'm like, 512. They're like, sure, but go straight up to your apartment. So I like kind of like didn't want to look at anything in any detail or anything. I just went right upstairs, and I even posted something on Facebook, like, you know, another shooting of an unarmed black man, probably, you know, just assuming what had probably happened.
Yeah.
I got in, I passed out, and then about 15 minutes later, I heard this intense pounding and shouting at my door. It was the police, and I was so scared. I was like, oh my God, like, given everything that I've just seen today.
Right.
And I just thought, like, oh my, maybe I've seen something I'm not supposed to see. You know, maybe I saw, I don't know. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to just let one of my white roommates answer the door, because I did not feel safe being black and answering that door. That's the reality of it. Those are my natural instincts.
I did not
feel safe. So I was like, and then I just thought it would go away. And it was intense, loud knocking, and it went away. And then about 15 minutes later, it came back, and it was even like more like, this is the police, like even louder. And I just like, I was freaking out.
Yeah.
I was like thinking like, they're going to come in here and they're going to fucking shoot me. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I'm terrified. And I just, I was like, maybe I'll call my mom, but it's like 2 a.m. on the Pacific coast. And then I didn't want them to think like my phone was a gun.
Right.
Maybe the police are also scared that, like, it's weird that my first reaction is thinking that they're going to see me and shoot. Like, that's the police's first reaction, is they shoot and then ask questions later. But that's where my mind is thinking of, that's what happens, you know?
Right.
Right? So, like, I just need to have my hands, like, up in the air. I look for my other roommates. They're all gone. I'm literally just thinking, this is it. Somehow I'm in this house by myself. The police are at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I yell to them. I'm like, it's just me. I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm really scared. Like, please don't shoot. I am unarmed. I, like, just please don't, like, I'm scared, you know?
Yeah.
They fucking knock down the knock. They, like, bust down the door, right? They, like,
oh
bust
my God.
Down, like, and I just think, like, they're gonna, I'm gonna get accidentally shot. And
so scary.
The officers come in, and they're just like, you know, why didn't you answer the door? And I'm like, come on, given everything that's going on, like, and I'm, you know, in tears, and it's just a lot that's been happening.
Yeah.
I've also just got home from the bars, like, 5 a.m, and I don't know what's going on. They then start firing a series of questions, and 2 detectives come in. They tell me just to breathe, and they tell me that there's been an accident, and that the person downstairs was my roommate, Noah, and apparently he was up on the roof, maybe trying to get in from the fire escape, and he fell from the 6th floor, and not long before I got home.
Horrifying.
So
horrifying.
They brought me to the police station. I had to, you know, reach out to my other roommates, and one of my roommates is also his girlfriend, and had to call her, and I didn't know what they don't tell you a lot of information of what's happening when a situation like this happens. They also lead you to a lot of questions. They plant seeds into your head of all kinds of scenarios into your head, so that you think that they know something, but they're like leading you into something. So that's why it's like, I can see that in the other case where, you know, people maybe do admit to things happening or something, you know, because there's so much that's happening, and trying to take in the shock of everything.
Yeah.
I sat in the police station for hours, and you're not being investigated, but you are, right? And
right.
I think that black folks should not have to live in fear of the police. I think that I feel like most white people probably, when the police are knocking at the door, no matter how loud it is, they're not scared, right?
That's a reality that we as black people deal with constantly.
Yeah. I think that we also ask our police to do too much, because I was in that police station for, like I said, I was in this room, no windows, no walls. I was sitting with this like off-duty cop who someone had to just sit there with me in the room, and I can hear his stomach growling, and I just lost a roommate and had to go through that like trauma and experience. And I'm not telling everybody the story to woe is me or that sort of thing, and just trying to paint a picture to a real life encounter of the realities of what people experience with the police, and specifically my black male experience. And I should have been with a counselor or a social worker or someone. And I could hear my roommate out, like when the news was delivered to her, I could hear her crying, and someone needed to be there to hug her. And I was stuck in this room, and they would not let me see her because they're questioning her if like maybe I had any involvement with things and planting seeds into her mind, and we're human beings. And if I think the police are there to protect and serve a community, and remember we're human beings, and there should be, you know, as we were leaving, at most the detective gave me like a piece of gum, like, where's like ice cream or blankets or something that like just comfort human beings
during moments of tragedy.
Yeah.
You know?
So I wanted to share that story, and I also wanted to dedicate this episode to my roommate, Noah Wickie, and he was one of the kindest people I've ever met, like genuinely so considerate, a ball of love and light and just unconditional love for everyone, and just such a beautiful, beautiful human being that has left this physical earth but is, you know, everywhere. And I ask everybody, because we've lost a physical person that admitted so much love, if we can make up for that. So be kinder to each other, love a little bit more, because there's someone who's giving, there's one less person giving all that he gave and every step he took, every smile that he flashed, every interaction that he had. So I've said this before, but the world could use a lot more love.
Thank you, James. Like, I love you. And I think it's so brave of you to share this story for our listeners, because you are shedding light onto a experience that not a lot of people experience. You were able to see the inside of the police system, and you saw the flaws in it. You were on both sides, which I think is so important to look at, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're noticing how it's disrupted to police and to the people. And I will definitely, to honor Noah, share as much love and openness and accepting and understanding as I possibly can.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
No, thank you.
And for those of you, we all experience loss and grief, and I implore you, we talked about this earlier, but getting counseling, therapy, I'm a huge, huge fan of it. Be kind to yourself. We all experience loss and grief at different in all different varieties and ways. Maybe you're struggling with something right now too. Reach out, mm-hmm. Eat whatever the hell you want, listen to music, go to the gym, be kind to yourself, right? Hang out with puppies. Puppies are very helpful. There's something magical about the nature and naturalness of these little animals that, like, for me was really helpful in healing. And also have really good sex. Like, really good sex. It's, oh man, makes you feel alive and human again.
Okay.
There are a lot of beautiful things that we have in this earth. I'm serious. Like, going back to, like, just, like, your things that will help heal you and just feel human again.
All right. Well, thanks, James, for sharing that. I really do appreciate it. And I know that our listeners do, too.
Listen up, Midwestern Max Funsters. Do not miss out on the inaugural Chicago Podcast Festival, November 17th through 19th. Catch the hilarious ladies of Lady to Lady and the witty and incisive Aneke and James from Minority Corner. Plus, Bullseye with Jesse Thorne will feature interviews with some pretty heavy hitters, like Andre Royo and Dwayne Kennedy. Don't snooze, don't lose. Tickets are available right now. Visit MaximumFun.org and buy them.
So, before we go, we're throwing out a new thingy-thang.
Yes.
Minority Corner Kids Speak. So, what we would love for you all, every month or so, every few weeks, we're going to have a new thing where you all can actually literally not only get involved in the conversation, but get on the podcast.
Yes.
So, what we want to do is send us audio recordings of your answer to this question, which is this week it's actually asking us a question.
Yes.
So the question that we want the Corner Kids to ask is, ask Minority Corner anything. You can ask us anything. We can answer your questions about maybe how we met, if you didn't know that, our thoughts and opinions on any specific subject, what we think about why the sky is blue. What do we think about turtlenecks in the summer?
Sure.
What do we think about the Lohans?
No.
Anything you want, we will answer it.
Within so reason. If you're asking us something perverted, I'm not going to answer it.
You think our corner kids would do that?
I don't know.
How many dicks do you suck on a daily basis?
See, I don't need to humor that.
Well, daily basis, I mean, I'm not sucking dicks every day.
I like how you are answering your own hypothetical creepy question.
Oh, I thought one of the corner kids asked that. No?
No, that's your head. That was your own fabrication.
Okay, just some examples. Whoops. Okay, so send your recordings, email them to minoritycorner@gmail.com, and that corner is with a K.
Yes. So just to remind you, the question is, what is your question for Minority Corner?
Ask Minority Corner anything. So send those in, and every few weeks we'll be switching up the question, and we're going to put your audio onto the podcast, so you're going to be officially part one of our correspondents, much like Dora the Explorer.
Who is on the ground, stomping around with her backpack and Diego being fierce as hell.
We pretty much consider Dora the Explorer our street team.
She's
like our street team for the kids version. They're literally the Latino cartoon version of us.
Children.
Child form. Yeah. Just like us. Diego's gay. Let's put it out there.
I have to plug that we are going to be at the Chicago Podcast Festival November 17th through the 19th, along with our other Max Fun compatriots, Bullseye with Jesse Thorne and Lady to Lady. So come support us, Chicago Podcast Festival, Steppenwolf Theater. You can buy tickets at chicagopodcastfestival.org.
Sounds good to me.
We will link it. We can't wait to actually meet face-to-face to all of you people who live in the area or who will be traveling there to see us. So
yay.
I believe tickets are $20.
Yeah,
we are opening.
We're doing a live episode.
Yes, a live-ass episode opening up for Cinema Jaw.
Yay.
And that is Friday at 7 p.m.
Yep, come check it out. You can also tweet at us. You can Twitter twat at us.
Yes, Minority Corner with a K.
If the hackers haven't gotten to it first, you can absolutely do that. And you can message us on our Facebook. Minority Corner, it takes a village.
It really does.
It takes a village here.
We appreciate all you corner kids, all you new corner kids, all you existing corner kids, all you...
You fact-checking corner kids.
Keeping us on our toes.
The guy who had... the guy who had the Pillsbury Doughboy can in his butt was not true. I kind of knew that that wasn't true, but I wanted it to be true. So thank you for fact-checking me on that. I appreciate it.
I'm glad, because that sounds painful as hell.
In my mind, it was true, but fair enough. You're right. So, well, I miss you like a fat kid loves cake.
And I will miss you like a...
That's a weird
non-offensive term for another non-offensive term.
I'm just quoting 50 Cent. I'm just trying to support my brother.
What's he doing? 50
Cent. Coming on this podcast, that's what he needs to do. Oh, and then I want to suck his dick. That's
weird. We just ended on a crazy way.
Bye,
that's
Mom.
Good. Yeah, that's... Okay, well, I think that's a good note to end on.
Wait, Aneke, you met 50 Cent at an airport?
Yes, I ran into 50 Cent at an airport. He had a giant head. He was surrounded by a lot of people.
Did you go down
And
on
his
him?
Skin was very nice. No.
His skin
I don't
very
find
nice.
Him attractive. He's a very nice man, I guess. I don't know.
Why was his skin so nice?
Because all rich people have very nice skin and really nice hair. That's just how you could tell a rich person. Because they're able to afford kills and shit.
You're like, oh, look, they're Vince. Look at them. They're like literally just like glowing auras. Oh, yes. Funny. We both were running into like hip-hop folks at the airport. I ran into Ice Cube at the airport the other day. And took,
oh, right.
I took a photo from him from a very comfortable, safe distance.
Yeah.
It was like 6 o'clock in the morning, and he was like not having it. And
did he have glowy skin?
He did, actually. And he looks hella youthful. He has not aged since, I'll say, Are We There Yet? He's definitely older than from Friday, but the first Are We There Yet.
That's not bad. That's like a good 15 years ago.
Yeah, so way to go, Ice Cube and 50 Cent.
Looking good, being old school hip hop dudes. I guess it's old school now, which is weird. And having good skin because they're rich.
And black.
That's true. Damn, that's a combination. If we get rich, we are going to have the most glowy, do angel baby kissed faces this side of America.
I can't wait. This side of America. Wait, but we're on both two separate sides of America. So you mean all of America?
Well, right now we're on the poor side of America.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like, oh, fair enough. Oh, okay. But we'll be in the rich bracket. So they'll be like, damn, look at them rich black folks with their glowing skin. That's what I want
they
them to say about
look
us.
Great. Yes.
We
it's
will win
be
the Nobel Prize for skin.
I'm into that. And you know what? I appreciate the fact that you did not say Peace Prize.
I was close, but we should, if our skin is that glowing, we should also win the Peace Prize because our skin will glow so much. It will just bring peace to the world. So you're welcome. You're welcome, Nobel.
You're welcome to our peace ushering skin.
You gotta put it out there into the universe. What it is that you want, you gotta put it out there.
I'm into that. I like bringing peace with my skin. That sounds gross or poetic. I can't tell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Travis McElroy.
I'm Griffin McElroy.
And we host the first podcast ever made, My Brother and Me.
Every Monday, we put out the first ever advice comedy podcast ever.
They found our podcast on Dead Sea Scrolls.
We're the Hammurabi Code of podcasts, and we're ready to entertain you with jokes that we invented, the first jokes.
So join us every Monday on MaximumFun.org.
You'll never crack our code, Dan Brown. Just try me.
It's history in the making.
And in the faking. And it's all yours for the taking.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.